Okay, and we're back again. I'm Liz.
And I'm Laura.
And you're listening to From X to Z podcast. And we have guests today. Full disclosure, we are working with shared mics. And Laura and I are sitting across a table from each other. So we're handing it back and forth as we work. We have four beautiful people sitting around the table right now. And so I'm Liz. I'm Gen X. As you know, Laura is Gen Z. And we have Tina Polchinski here.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, Tina. And what generation are you?
I don't know. Baby boomer in US?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And then her daughter, Rebecca, is here.
Hey.
Hey. And Rebecca, you are Gen
Z.
Gen Z.
I think. Yep. 98.
You're younger than me. So oh. You're definitely Gen yeah. Z.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I am going to introduce them from my angle of life. Yeah. So Rebecca and I have been friends for 7 years now. 7 or 8, around there, which is a long time. Mm-hmm. So we've been best friends. And then her mom's here too. So we're going to, she's like my second mom. Before Rebecca and I were roommates, I stayed at your house all the time. And
yes,
I was
did.
The fourth child.
Yeah, fifth child.
The fifth child. Yes, that's right. So yeah, I'm also in a group chat with Rebecca and her sisters. So I feel like I'm the adopted redheaded stepchild.
You are.
So yeah, I'm excited to have you guys on here to talk about mother-daughter relationships and your Korean heritage and all that kind of fun stuff. So thanks for joining us.
How do I know you guys? I'm trying to think back to the beginnings.
Since
the beginning, Marco.
When Marco passed away,
like, there.
We've gone to the same church for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But I think we didn't really get connected until Marco passed mm-hmm. away. And I don't really know how that all started. I think we just became like in the same circle. And that was six mm-hmm. years ago. And so we've just kind of become closer and closer and closer. Mm-hmm. And Tina, Rebecca's mom, and I have also become friends, and she has invited me over, and she has brought many a Korean dishes to my house, which just warms my heart, because one of the things, I mean, I miss a lot of things about my mom, who I've talked about, it was also Korean. I miss a lot of things about her, obviously. And one of those things is her cooking, because, I mean, Korean food is just like a whole other level. And if you don't know, then you don't know. But if you do know, then you know. And it isn't easy to duplicate either. It's really hard to make. And so it's comfort food for me. And it's also like a love language for me. Not just food, but specifically Korean food. So you're speaking my love language when you bring my little treats to my house, and I really, really appreciate it, like more than you'll ever know. So,
welcome.
So yeah. So thanks for being here and a part of our podcast.
Thank you for having us, Willie.
I have a question for Rebecca.
Okay.
Let's start us off with a little icebreaker.
Love it.
If you had to eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I don't know, but I really do love when we have Korean food on Sunday afternoon at mom's house. That, speaking of Korean food, samgyeopsal, which is like, what is it, pork belly, like strips and like cut up, and then like you fry it on the pan and it's really fresh and you're eating it. And I love that meal because it tastes really good, but also it's very like communal and fun. And mom's like hurt by the end of it because she's always feeding everybody else. And I don't love that about it, but it just, you know, it's like you said, what did you say? The thing of love, a love language, you know, just like that's a special thing. So,
yum, that sounds delicious. I've had that a few times. Okay, Tina, question for you. What is the best compliment you've ever received?
I don't know, because I'm an Asian. People think they don't look my age.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the biggest compliment I have, other than I like your food. Oh my gosh. Yes, a lot of people do that. I think That's a big compliment, right?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that is a good
and
one.
And your skin. Oh, mm-hmm. I got aging skin. One of the ladies, she says, so what do you put on your face? I said, I use the Korean the skincare, and I share with her. She says, I want to buy that, and I want to look like her. And I tried it. I put a lot on it, but I don't look like her.
Like, you got to keep trying.
I don't know, but most Asians don't look their ages, mm-hmm. especially these days. They use a lot of good product. But I seen this new generations, they really work on their skin cares. Mm-hmm. And even the older people, they don't look that old at all. Mm-hmm. And used to be they celebrate 60 is a really big number. They used to do that. Not anymore. They do 70s maybe, but you see some of the, like I watch some talk shows and here and there, and Korean people, they don't look their ages at all. But I guess lots of people looking at me, mm-hmm. like, they can't guess my age. So I guess
that's a big compliment. That's a really big compliment. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you get that too.
I do get that.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope that it continues as I get older. The older I get, the more meaningful that compliment is.
Well, actually, you look like you're aging backwards. And longer I know, you look younger.
Well, that's the best compliment I've ever received right there. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You look good.
Thank you. One of the weirdest compliments I've received about being Korean was that people will say, oh my gosh, I love K-pop. Like I had anything to do with that. thank you. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. Yeah. So, yeah. So like we said, we just thought it'd be fun to chat with our friends. Also, like, we share in that Korean heritage. And so we thought it'd be fun to talk about that as well. And so Laura came up with some really good questions about that. We're going to move into that. So those were the icebreakers, but now we're getting really serious. Okay. So, Tina,
yes.
What were some of the most important values or traditions from Korean culture that you wanted to pass on to your daughters?
Well, I'm kind of an old school myself anyways, mm-hmm. but I actually lived outside of Korea longer than I ever lived in Korea. But I was already adult, so most of what I was seeing and raised by my parents are a little different, but when I grow up in my country, in my culture, where I come from, is till these days, they do some generations, new generations, a little changed, but we are really respect elders, mm-hmm. elders. They really care about your age, even the days, how many days you were born. Mm-hmm. They might know things better, more wiser. Not everybody is that way, but they do very respectful. Mm-hmm. That's what I think that's very important because you can learn from older generations mm-hmm. and they know more and they can teach you by their experience. And that's how I born and raised. So that's why I really want to do my children to carry on and rest of their lives, mm-hmm. just respect elders.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important thing in Korean culture. So much so that, okay, I don't speak Korean, but correct me if I'm wrong, but even like the way that you would address like a brother or a sister, depending on whether they were older than you or younger than you, that's different.
Mm-hmm. You have different words for it. Mm-hmm. Like exampling, I have younger brothers, so that's 동생, meaning it's the same brothers, but 동생 is younger than you.
Mm-hmm.
The male older brother is 오빠, meaning you're mm-hmm. older than you. So everybody knows that he's my 오빠, meaning that's my older brother. Mm-hmm. You don't have to explain. Oh, he's my 동생, means my younger brother. And the girls are 언니, means older brother. Same as 동생 means your younger sibling. So the boys and girls are different words for it. And that's how we raise. We don't call by first name. Hey, you.
Well, I know too, and I think that's recently changed, where in Korea you're actually a year older like than in America. Is that correct? Because your day of...
So when you're born, used to be, when you're born, you're already a year old. Okay, so example, I was born in 62, it's 1962 in November. So I was 1 year old.
Okay.
1963, 1st of January, I become 2 years old.
Oh.
So you go, you know, like that. So I have less than 2 months. Yeah. I was 2 years old already.
Wow.
So, but people were saying that now new generation, I think they changed the law now actually. Mm-hmm. So they do like American age.
Okay. Okay.
Whenever you're born and then you hit next first year that you're a year old, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I was older than most people because my birthday is late.
I was going to say a funny story about my mom is that my mom thought that she and my dad were the same age. And then after they got married and they were looking at, or maybe it was when they were filling out their wedding certificate or something like that, and they put the year that they were born, they like were disagreeing about it because it was like, you weren't born that year. You were born this year. And she's like, no, I was born this year. And it's like, we're the same age and all this other stuff. So yeah, it was really funny. Yeah, that's when she discovered what? I'm older than you.
Okay, Rebecca, question for you. What are some of your favorite Korean traditions that you grew up with?
So I have one like serious and then one silly. So the serious one is exactly what mom was talking about, which is like just respecting people that are older than you. And I'll talk about that later too. But just the idea that if you are in the room with somebody that's older than you, just always trying to address them by their, you know, Miss or Mister and then their last name, because it just shows that they have lived longer. And so there's a reverence there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I appreciate that because it's taught me to respect older people and is always a humbling reminder that I don't know everything. So it can always encourage me to remember that. So I like that part. But then the silly one is there's a Korean tradition. November 11th is something called Pepero Day, which is like a company that makes like long, I guess it's like wafer cookie sticks. Yeah, they call them Pocky. Well, here they sell Pocky sticks. Yeah, but in Korea, it's like a huge holiday. But I remember like you could go into any store and you could find like giant Pocky sticks, like 2 feet tall at least. And so growing up, mom would always get us like boxes and it's like, it's Pepero Day.
All right. Question for Tina. Can you share some of the challenges that you faced when moving from Korea to America? And how did you overcome those challenges?
Challenges, obviously, language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hearing is better than speaking. Writing is harder than reading for me. Okay. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? When I came here, there's no Korean here. I was living in Rhode Island, Jamestown, Rhode Island. There's nobody, no agents. I saw the one Korean doctor because the nurse brought it to me, to my room, because I had barely speak English. I came here 3 months later, I had my first child. And then I barely speak English. So the nurse bring me one, a Korean doctor. And we spoke a little bit. So that was it. Until I left there, I haven't really met any Koreans. So I can't speak. Who am I going to speak? So, right. I pretty much learn watching TV because when I got there, I was bed rest because I can say it in English. I had a swelling pretty bad, my ankle, like size of my thigh. Mm-hmm. So they told me to the bed rest. So I was in a living room and I was watching TV. Usually get up in the morning, watch the, I don't know if you guys can remember, General Hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Back in those days. So,
the soap operas.
I came here in 1985. Okay. So Tracy, my oldest, born in 1985. That time, that was popular in the morning. So, you know, obviously you can understand the whole thing, but when you watch TV, you know how it goes, even though you don't understand every word. So That's the most challenging thing till these days. Yeah. Till these days, it's rough, hard. Even though I lived outside of a country longer than I ever lived in Korea, but you know, that's the bottom foundation. That's where you're born and, you know, raised and learn, and it does never go away.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I repeat myself to people that like a sentence or word because I can say clearly,
mm-hmm.
even though I think is right way to say it. But like a Koreans can say that a lot of L or PH, F, they can pronounce that right. So I think I'm a whole lot better than decades ago, but I still can pick up like you guys, like normally Americans talk. So that's the most, the hardest thing.
Well, I think in American culture too, we use a lot of slang, which is really hard. I think I have once heard that like English language, at least the dialect that we use here in America, is really hard for people to pick up, not because of the words per se, but because of all the slang that we use that doesn't mean like the literal translation. So yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I remember that with my mom too. One thing comes to mind where I thought I was going to get in trouble. And I don't know if I want to share that story, but I will. I was in high school and I was kind of being bratty teenager, and my mom was a little bit of a smart aleck. Like, I don't know if you all know that about me, but my mom and I, we weren't really arguing. We were just kind of, I don't know, she's just getting on my nerves because, again, I was a bratty teen at that time. And I don't even remember what we were talking about, but we were sitting on the couch and she said something and I was like, oh, bite me. And she stopped and she looked at me and she said, bite you. And I went, yeah. And I'm sitting there thinking like, oh God, I can't take it back. I can't take it back. I'm dead. Like, she's going to kill me. And she just looked at me. First, I thought she was mad, but then I realized she was confused. And she looked at me again. She was like, bite you? And I was like, yeah, I didn't mean it. And she goes, you want me to bite you? And then she said, I'll bite you. And she grabbed my arm and she bit me, like, not hard. And then, of course, all the tension was gone and we just started laughing. And I was like, thank you, Jesus, that she did not know what I meant by saying that. And we could just laugh about it and move on. And so, yeah. Anyway. Okay, Rebecca.
Yes.
So you have actually lived in Korea mm-hmm. for a time.
Yep.
You were born here in the United States?
Yeah, Watertown, New York.
You're
Fort
a New
Drum.
Yorker? Mm-hmm. How about
I'm
that?
I'm a New Yorker.
I didn't know that about you.
For 2 whole years.
Okay, so the question is, what was it like to move to Korea, and how long were you there?
Mm-hmm.
And moving back to America. So that was, and like growing up here and stuff. So that's one of the questions. And then what are some key memories that you have with your family during those changes?
Yeah. So we lived in Korea for about 3 years. I'm the youngest in my family, but so whenever I was 5, we were in Kentucky. We left and we went to Korea. My dad was stationed there for 3 years. He got some job in the military doing something. I don't know what it was. I couldn't
soldier
tell you.
Stuff. My dad was also in the military, and I just always referred to it as soldier stuff.
Yeah, soldier stuff. Yeah. Government contracting company. That
Your yeah. mom knows more about it than you do.
Absolutely, she does.
I mean, where's the cultural divide there? She gets it.
But yeah, I was 5, and then we lived there for about 3 years, and then we came back when I was 8. So it was a fun experience as a kid. I have stories and stuff from when we were little, but I don't remember like a whole lot when we came back.
She spoke Korean fluently, and she's just like normal Koreans. I can have a conversation with her. Soon as we got back here and started going back to Hannah McClure, went back to Hannah McClure, she forget. She doesn't want to talk because I think even though she doesn't express herself out, she feels different.
Mm-hmm.
So she doesn't want to speak Korean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a, I mean, that's a thing. I actually, when I was growing up in an elementary school, my mom was discouraged from teaching us to speak Korean. Mm-hmm. And at the time, they told her that they discouraged being bilingual in the home. And they said that it would be confusing for us. Mm-hmm. And so she should just teach us English and only speak English in the home. And now that I think about that as an adult, I'm like, oh, what a missed opportunity. Thanks a lot, education system. I could be bilingual and speak to my Korean family, but mm-hmm. nope, I can't do that now. So anyway, I'm not bitter. But Rebecca, that's so
crazy.
But you also, like, when you like food, for example, mm-hmm. when you say the names, you'll be like, do you like this? And I'm like, I don't know. Cause you say it like fluently, like Korean words, and my mom would Americanize stuff for us. Mm-hmm. Like, like japchae and bibimbap and like bulgogi and like those types of things. But a lot of the dishes, she would just be like, it's fish soup. And she wouldn't use the actual. So when you speak Korean in terms of food, it's like, wow, that was really good. I don't know what that means, though. That's and so then funny. You'll be like, you know, like the seaweed soup. I'm like, oh, yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm thankful because mom always made the point to say stuff, or like, you know, there's Korean drama or reality shows playing on the TV all the time. There's always something in the background to like keep it going. But yeah, my sisters would talk about it too. Like whenever we were in Korea, they couldn't find a bathroom or something. And so they had like asked me to like pick up on which, like where it was, or like tell them where. And it had something to do with the language barrier. They couldn't understand. And so I was able to tell them. But I don't remember really any of that. But coming back here, now my sisters can read and write it a little bit, and definitely speak it better than I can. But I can like, I can't speak it as well as I can sometimes pick up on stuff. So like, I'll listen to my mom talk to her friends on the phone. She's outside like picking weeds, and then she's filling them all in on like where we're at, you know, oh, this kid hasn't moved out yet. And this one is trying to get a degree, and this one's driving me crazy, or, you know, the husband's, you know, on my nerves, or, you know, just silly stuff like that, you know, just Korean friends chatting. But yeah, so I can definitely understand. Yeah.
Most of them. So she's a translator because I speak Konglish.
Yeah. Korean, English, Konglish. Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, looking back on my childhood, I do think that transition from going to Korea and then coming back to America, those developmental years, I felt like it was hard for me trying to insert myself in the American culture. I remember we went on a field trip to Carter Caves or something, and this mom was like, yeah, call me by my first name. It's Valerie. And I was like, I'm not allowed to do that. I was like, I must call you by, I don't know, I forget what her last name is. It's Jones. I must call you Mrs. Jones. Aww. And she's like, no, I promise. It's fine. And so it's like, I've got two adults in my life telling me two different things, and I don't know who to believe. And I erred on the side with my mom. So stuff like that was really hard. And even still as an adult, sometimes I struggle with, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm half Korean, or oh yeah, I'm half American, or, you know, Caucasian. And that's sometimes a hard thing to comprehend.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. I grew up kind of with the same perspective, where it was like, on the one hand, sometimes people would forget, myself included, that mm-hmm. I had this whole other half of me that was not white.
Right.
Because I assimilated very easily because mm-hmm. I looked a lot more like other people being half Korean, right? Mm-hmm. I looked a lot more like my classmates and things like that. On the other hand, though, it was like, I'm not quite white, mm-hmm. and there's something different about you, but I don't really know what it is. Mm-hmm. And so people would, I mean, like, especially growing up in the 80s and stuff, I mean, it was, if you were Asian, you must be Chinese mm-hmm. or Japanese, because those are the only two. Mm-hmm. And so people would ask me that too. Are you Chinese or Japanese? I'm like, I'm neither of those, actually. So yeah, just feeling that, like, on the one hand, you fit in, and on the other hand, you're different. Mm-hmm. And then even in the context of family, like with my dad's side of the family, who's the Caucasian American side, it was like we were different. But then on my mom's side, it was like we weren't Korean enough, so we were mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. And so there's all these things. And I actually remember it was my senior year in high school, and I was filling out these scholarship applications and stuff for college, and we were in English, and my best friend was sitting behind me. And I got to the question where it says, what percentage of your graduating class is the same ethnicity as you? Mm-hmm. And it just kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I looked around the room, and I looked at my best friend sitting behind me, and I was like, look at this question. And she read it, and I was like, what do I put? And she it was really funny, but she looked at me and she goes, oh my God, you're not white. And so and so it's just, you know, it was that kind of like, on the one hand, you felt like everybody else and nobody really thought of you as different. But then mm-hmm. on the other hand, some people really did think of you yeah. as different. And so it was kind of hard for me anyway, to kind of find my place mm-hmm. Growing up. So, and then another thing that you brought to mind whenever you were talking about names, Tina, for you, your birth name is not Tina. So your Korean name is?
Kashil.
And
writing in English is Kasil.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of hard to pronounce to anybody. Well, I was, when I came into America, the second state I was living in, I knew how to do a little bit of sewing. So I started working at a sewing factory. And then the second job I was working at, I could not make a living because I, that time I was a single mother. I had to have that another job. Mm-hmm. So I was working at a sewing factory in the morning, and I go to work at the restaurant. And then till that was a very 1986 or so. So I still don't speak that much anyways, but I got to get some more money. So I work at the, what's the name of the place? The hotel. There was a huge down in Columbia, South Carolina. Holiday Inn was, mm-hmm. the hotel was pretty big, and they had like a club on the side. They got a restaurant, really fancy restaurant inside. I don't know if they still have that or not, about literally 40 years ago. But anyway, you have to put a name tag on it. You had the bow tie on it, kind of a little fancy restaurant. You explain yourself, what's your name, you know, today's a special, da 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 da, whatever. And then end of the meal, you give them a check and the comment card on the back of it. So when I went through that, I started working there a little bit. And then one of the Asian girl, I don't know where she come from, but she was exchange student. She wasn't allowed to work, but she was working. Anyway, her name was Tina, spells T-E-E-N-A. So I told my husband, hey, I'm going to call by Tina because she's called. My name is hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
So I said, I want to call by T-E-N-A, Tina. She said, nobody spelled Tina like that, T-I-N-A. I was okay. So
you're like, okay, done, so whatever.
Then call Tina. Well, I got called by Tina, but my legal name is a Kasir, so I do my paperwork. But anyway, when I get my citizenship done, I have a chance to, you can change your name free. You don't have to pay anything, yeah, only time.
Okay.
But I did, and I said, well, because I wanted to change it. And then whole my family says, Mom, why you want to change it? You know, that's your family giving them a keep it. So that's why I kept it, my name. I didn't change it legally, but I called by Tina longer than my real name.
Yeah. My mom experienced that too. So we grew up in Harlan County, southeastern Kentucky, and her Korean name is Tuk-soon. And so you can imagine not a lot of people knew how to say that correctly. Mm-hmm. And so her surname, her family name was Kim. Mm-hmm. And so she just took that. She never legally changed it. Her name was still Tuk-soon, but everybody knew her as Kim. Yeah, so it was easier.
A lot of people that I knew since I came in the U.S. to live in, I see a lot of Koreans. That's how they, because their real name kind of hard to pronounce right. So they call by their maiden name, you know, like Lee. My Koreans never change the last name when you get married. So my mother is Lee. Her first name, the maiden name is Lee. Her last name is Lee, because she never had a man. She never changed her name. So my, the children, of course, follow after the father. So mine is Kim. So I have a couple of my kids that have all of my.
Oh, yeah.
Same with my mom. Yeah, Amy Kim, Jessica Lee.
Aww.
Becca's the only one had my mother-in-law, because I kind of feel bad for her. So. Rebecca N with the E. She always says that. N with the E.
Anthony. Aw.
Yeah,
Anthony.
But talking about that being half and half, and I never, so I, you know, whatever's challenging me most, it's just throughout the living. Now I'm getting more Americanized. There's things like, you know, I'm trying to observe to wherever I go, wherever I live, because I live in U.S. My first child that sent to school, well, back then she was in Columbia, South Carolina. They only had a half day for kindergarten. So first few days or so, of course, you go to bus stop, you know, pick her up. And she said, as soon as she get off the bus, she goes, Mommy, Chinese, Japanese. And she's only 5 years old. I could not explain to her. My English wasn't that great either, and my heart just sank. Mm. So that was kind of sad. But I'm pretty sure my children doesn't really talk about them being a biracial grown up in the U.S. and how the school life is and things like that. But I'm sure they dealt with that while they grown up.
Sorry, I keep thinking of more questions. So, Rebecca, I think that you can relate to this because I feel like we've talked about this. I didn't feel a whole lot of like being treated different, I guess, although it was there, like I said, but I felt like my experience, especially like I said, being discouraged to learn Korean language and stuff like that. Now as an adult and I look back at it, I don't have like negative feelings towards it or anything, but I can see where I feel like a lot of growing up in the culture that I grew up in was very whitewashed. Mm-hmm. Can you relate? Like, assimilate to the Caucasian culture, to the American life. It wasn't really a celebrate your Korean culture and let's learn about your Korean culture. And you should be encouraged to learn about your Korean culture. It was very much like, well, you're in the America, so we're going to. So that's what I mean by whitewashing. It felt very Americanized and more of like, we're going to focus on that part because you're here. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like my Korean culture was not celebrated or even encouraged for me to explore that growing up here. Again, like not negative, like it wasn't a negative experience for me by any means. I had a great childhood. But looking back on it now, I just see instances where I wasn't encouraged to really celebrate that side. In my home, yes, right. But anywhere else. Yeah. No, not so much.
I feel like I can't really think of teachers that took a moment to sit me down and maybe, you know, ask those questions about where I come from, who I am. Unless they did and I didn't remember it, but I feel like that would have been probably a game changer. You know, somebody to provoke that thought in me and say, you know, how are you different and how can you acknowledge that and not suppress that in order to fully be yourself in whatever space you're in, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get that.
So I'm following my niece on Instagram, and that sometimes that like the comments they have, I said, what are they talking about? 토포가 되겠어. I mean, what is that? I mean, words they use, they make short, like LOL. They say k-k. It's like in Korean, the vowel they use or the alphabet they use. Mm-hmm. But the words they, what's the 다자? So that means something. They're short for something. I don't understand what that is.
It's like Generation Alpha in America. Like, what does skibbity mean?
So they use a lot of the words make shorter. And
okay.
And then some of the words don't sound like they're cursing, so I don't like that. But that's their way to do talking. And I seen one TV program that older generations learning the new language. I don't think it's really necessarily need to do that, but that's what they said. We need to have a communication with the younger generations. So that's how they learn. But anyway, I see she doesn't post a lot, but when I see some of the stuff, they had a little, the comments on it, how they talk, and I cannot understand what they're talking about.
A very simple one, like here, that was probably whenever I was in middle and high school that was starting to be used a lot is ain't. So, you know, is not. Like, for a minute there, specifically, I remember, like, elementary going into middle school, I was like, ain't? What are you saying? You know, it's just like that. It means isn't, or, you know, is not going to happen, mm-hmm. whatever, that ain't going to happen. But but I feel like that probably happens in every culture.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as times change. So makes sense. But
like here, they said the place I work, they, whatever is a pinto bean soup is popular. They call soup in. Why do you guys call soup in?
Oh, soup beans. Know. Yeah.
What is it called? Vegetable soup, potato soup, certain sort of soup. Why is it called soup in? They say it's a slang, so I don't know why. I think
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a funny story. Someone a couple years ago said they were talking about, they were at a soccer game, and they were, when they came back off the field, someone told them, wow, you ate. Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, I went to Chick-fil-A earlier. And they were like, no, like you did a good job. Ate and means now means you did great. Like you ate. So you ate and left no crumbs.
Spell? How do you spell?
A-T-E, like you ate food, which is why it's so
That's
confusing.
What it means?
Yeah.
Wow. See,
you ate
different
or
generation.
You cooked. Same thing means you did great. You made no mistakes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Wow.
Isn't that
I'm
funny?
Telling you, life is unlearning. Yeah. Every day learning.
Yeah. I just think it's so interesting, though, that like, things like that that are very culturally specific are still like cross-cultural. Like it's still like in Korean culture, they're still doing it. Like Gen Alpha over there is still coming up with slang terms and stuff. We're doing it here, or we aren't. We're trying to learn what the words mean, but the younger generation is doing it here. I just think that's so interesting.
Okay. Next question for Tina. What were some of the most rewarding moments you experienced as a mother raising four daughters?
Rewarding moments a lot, but I really feel lots of times, you know, feel guilty. And I was talking to my husband the other day, and he goes, you really don't have self-confidence. And I say, I guess not. But, you know, I feel always feeling guilty, not good enough a mother. You know, I could be better mother. I could be, if I was American, if I don't get birth to my kids, like, you know, different cultures, if they're full American, if I was a full American mother, I could be better. I thought about that a lot of times. But anyway, they did good. I can't say I did my best, even though I think I tried my best and I could be better. But I'm just being grateful that individual child, who they are, who they become. And most of all, they serving the God. That's the most reward for me.
And I think that's just, that's such a universal thing as a mom too, which again is why I think it's so interesting talking about, the most rewarding thing and the challenges and stuff of motherhood, and whether you are Korean or American or half, or whatever the case may be, like that mom guilt that we have and that always feeling like we could do better, we should do better, and doing our best, but what does better look like? I mean, I just think that's something that I think for all mothers just kind of like connects us and like helps us to realize that motherhood is hard, mm-hmm. and but it's so rewarding, mm-hmm. but that you're also not alone, and however it is that you're dealing with it or feeling it or whatever the challenges may be. I just think it's a comforting thing to hear you, who's a different generation, a different cultural upbringing, a different life experience. But when it comes to motherhood, like we're both like that, the guilt is there, the wanting to do the best we can and try harder for our kids. I just think that's such a comforting thing because it is such a universal thing. So
Thank you. Yeah. That's really encouraging. But because of my background, I want to be put everything to my kids, the education. I'm the person that believes the education pay for it, that we choose, and I don't have any education background. And when my kids are going to school,
because the language barrier, I could not help them so much. Mm-hmm. And I really, really worked hard with her. And I literally sit down with working with her schoolwork up to like fifth grade. So, and after that, I could not do it. I could not help. That was really devastated. And that's what I most feel bad for my children. Mom is, you know, different culture that cannot speak, you know, right or better for them to help them. That's what I had feel bad.
Yeah. Well, don't, because my oldest is in middle school. And I mean, since the point he reached fifth grade and he brought home math homework, I'm like, Mama can't help you, honey. I'm very, very sorry, but that may as well be a foreign language to me. So, yeah, fifth grade math and beyond was just a little too. Oh my gosh! Don't be too hard on yourself about that one.
Oh, that's funny, Rebecca. Question for you. I know you and your sisters are very close.
Super close.
Yep, lots of inside jokes and stuff like that.
Mom.
But with you being the youngest, I know there's tug and pull with older siblings teasing, but also wanting to protect and wanting the best for you, because mm-hmm. I'm the older sister and I have two younger sisters. So are there any moments that you remember them fighting for you instead of with you? Or do you have any funny stories to share about your childhood with your sisters?
I can just really appreciate their experiences because Jessica, I mean, we have four sisters, two of them are half, and then they had us three together. So I lived most with Jessica and Amy, which they're fully related to me. And their experiences and their way of navigating the world has helped me so much. So I think in a sense that they didn't realize it, but they were fighting for somebody like me to come behind them, if that makes sense. Like my sister going through her college application stuff and being the first one to go to college in our family, that was a really big thing because she went through all the experiences. She went and lived on campus. She was in a dorm, you know, all that kind of stuff, got a job, the first car in the family, all that kind of stuff. That was really helpful because when it finally came time to me, I felt way more equipped to do those things because I could always go and ask her or Amy. So even more recently, she had been to college and she was in college whenever I started. They didn't realize that they were making a way for somebody like me to have not necessarily just have it easier, being the baby of the family. You know, you get teased about, oh, you've just got everything handed to you. And I fully agree that in some ways, some things were definitely handed to
you. Yeah, I can relate to that.
You can relate, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some things were handed to us because we were the babies.
Yeah. I also say that by the time I came along, my parents were just tired.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As someone who has a third child and the baby, I can relate to that too. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I mean, sure, you have a popsicle for breakfast. I don't even care. Not going to fight that battle. So yeah, I can relate.
Yeah. It makes sense. You know, just having multiple kids in one family, just how life changes. But also I think they showed me how to navigate that world and showed me how to work for things with their experiences, them also being biracial, them also wanting to pursue higher education, them also trying to find out new jobs, them also navigating, you know, tricky relationships and things like that. All of those experiences I relied on and still rely on. You know, we have a weekly like FaceTime where we just chit chat and we're filling each other in all of our stuff. And I love them a lot. And now especially, like, it's so tacky to even say it, but you know, like the saying, I'd throw hands for them or whatever. Like they would just, yeah, they would absolutely do anything to help me succeed. And they really care about me and they've always shown that. And I'm, in adulthood, those relationships are really special right now, and I really appreciate them.
I think that is sisterhood. It's kind of like my sister and I have that relationship where, I mean, I can say whatever I want to say about my sister, but if somebody else does, mm-hmm. like, I'm coming after you hard, you know? Yeah. I mean, literally, I could say something and someone else could repeat it back to me, and I'd be like, hey, you're talking about my sister. So, yeah. Not that I'd ever say anything bad about you, sis, if you're listening.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. Tina, was there a role that your community played in helping to raise your daughters?
My husband was in the military, so we moved around a lot. Everywhere mm-hmm. you go, you have to make yourself a home. Otherwise, you're not going to be surviving. But everywhere we go, I'm looking for good youth program church.
Yeah.
Because I want to raise them right in the church. But number one is a language barrier. And number two, I don't know the cultures. I can't really fit in everywhere I go. But at least my children, I want them to fit in that group, that atmosphere of that church in town. And, you know, it's not every church is great and mm-hmm. the best, but that's yeah. what I did. And that's the big community thing that really helped, because that's what I want to do it. And I've been in our country since 1985. I came here in 1985, but I left a few times too because my husband was in the military, deployed in different countries. The first time and last time I ever been to Korean church in Fort Drum, New York, was we were there 4 years. There's a difference. And I feel a whole lot comfortable because I understand better. Mm-hmm. Worship is a really big thing because you get anointed by your worshiping mm-hmm. God, and you're singing and you understand better. You feel better to worship Him. Like the language is like, I understand, but it doesn't touch me like my own language. Like exampling, like you have a heartache, but in Korean words, 가슴이 아파. It hits me more than in English. Well, that means your chest hurt, but it's like your heartache. 마음이 아파, it's the same meaning, but I can relate it to more. Even though I listen to the preacher, even the worshiping, it touches me more.
Yeah. I remember for Christmas one year, Rebecca, didn't you record for a Christmas gift? You recorded a worship song in Korean. Yeah.
I have here.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be in Korean, but I couldn't learn it.
Oh, okay.
So it was just her favorite.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
But I had full intentions.
That was right. Just, you meant to do it in Korean. Okay, gotcha.
Have It All by Bethel.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yes, absolutely. Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
I mean, that's what can you give more when you worship song? You can't have it all, God.
Yeah.
Or you can have it all.
Yeah.
Right? So that was... That time I was my favorite song.
Yeah. Also, a little side note that Rebecca leads worship in our church and has an amazing voice. She's one of my favorites to listen to. And so that's why I asked her to break out in song just now.
She does not singing. She's worshiping.
She's worshiping. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I am grateful.
Yeah.
And I thank God for it.
Yeah. She's very, very gifted. Very talented, and we love her so much.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to other immigrant parents raising children in a country different than their own?
I Googled it. 골속담, what the Korean people say, is a proverb saying that if you go to Rome, you have to follow their rules, their laws. You do as what they do. So if you coming from different country trying to fit in an American culture and you are against where you come from, I mean, you know, against the U.S. rules, it's going to be harder. But it's important to carry down your own culture down to generations where mm-hmm. you come from. Don't forget that. But when you're trying to make a living or make you're living in a U.S. from different cultures, you're going to have to follow their rules.
Mm-hmm. Kind of goes back to what you started off saying about the importance of respect mm-hmm. in your culture and in raising your family and even coming to the country. Respect for just other elders and wisdom, but also respect for other people's ways of life and rules. And yeah. Rebecca.
Yeah.
So bouncing off that question, what are some qualities you saw in your mom growing up that inspires you for how you serve or work with others?
So there's a lot. And if I talked about them all, we would be here all night. But truthfully, like, the one word that comes to my mind if I ever think about my mom immediately is like resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes in American culture, there's sometimes a lack of resiliency and just willingness to do what's hard. And my mom has been through so much. Before we started recording, she was talking about when she was working in a microphone factory mm-hmm. when she started at the age of 12. And just, you know, knowing what her upbringing was like and everything she had to do to make a way here and to take care of us here, for each child, all of the struggles that she went through with her previous marriage and, you know, even with my dad now, like, they're happily married.
For how many years? How long have you all been married, you and Dawn?
35.
Wow.
Well, we went together 38.
Oh, wow.
38 years together. We've been legally married at 35.
Awesome.
Yeah. But like my dad at one point was a heavy alcoholic. And so things like that. And he has completely lived a life where he's fully surrendered to God and he's really turned things around. And God has really worked through him. It's been a very beautiful thing. But, you know, that sometimes those things hit at the same time. It was a really difficult time for my mom. And so, you know, and she let us know growing up, like, you always should be grateful. Like, you don't know how hard it can be mm-hmm. sometimes. And I mean, I come back to that a lot whenever I feel like my circumstance is not ideal or it's really difficult. Somebody out there probably has it as hard or harder for sure than I do, which helps me stay motivated in working and serving. So I feel like that's a big one, if that makes sense.
It absolutely does. Yeah.
And I think now too, like, there are some stressors in life in different areas and specifically with people. And I get really frustrated with people and have a hard time sometimes seeing them as imago Dei and made in the image mm-hmm. of God because they do things that are so frustrating. Like, nobody probably knows that better than my mom. Like, she has encountered sometimes the worst of humanity, people that are racist or just, you know, derogatory, you know, just stuff recently that she was telling me about that she's like, you know, I do what I can to move away from that person. I'm like, they shouldn't do that to you. Yeah, you know, I'm fired absolutely. Up about that. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Still now, you still have to deal with that after you've been here longer than some of these people have, like yeah. that. It eats at me. But, you know, again, she's able to still give grace to those people. And for me, whenever I'm working with other people or trying to serve other people, obviously I feel like that comes from an outflow of what God has done in my life. Like, I couldn't pour out if he wasn't pouring into, but it is also because of how my mom has built me up and poured into me and the example she's set in not being discouraged or dismayed. Or, you know, again, choosing grace when you want to throw somebody in a fire. I don't know, you know, like, whenever I want to do what I want to do, I'll think about her. And so I feel like she's pours into that well as well. if that makes sense.
I have something to say about that. We just recently had a small group on the fruit of the Spirit. We all went around and we talked about which fruit of the Spirit stuck out the most to each of us. And for Rebecca, almost every single person, everyone said faithfulness. And it just makes me think about how you are so faithful and resilient. And that's mm-hmm. kind of like leading into Rebecca mm-hmm. and like her life, how it's poured out at church, how it's poured out in my life as best friends for 7 years, and how you're just so faithful to people even when it's hard. Mm-hmm. You show up and you keep giving because of you and because of what you've put poured into her. And it's just mm-hmm. like, I can see that and I can feel that as a best friend. And I know many other people can as well. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that, oh, Tina. And because I'm blessed by Rebecca, and that's a product of you. So thank you.
You sweet.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Aww. Yeah. I mean, you guys are just like some of my favorite people in the world. So, yeah, for sure.
Ditto.
Oh, it's just a love fest, you guys.
I want to just add one more thing to the end of this conversation that I want to say to the young generation where I come from. We didn't have none of those things. All the programs this country has for younger generation, educations. I mean, it's million things out there you can take advantage of. Well, Korea has a war, 1950s. So around that time, a lot of people, you know, have to start from the nothing. And then, of course, their parents is really pushing to the education. Till these days, the country do that. If I, you know, married a Korean guy and living my life in Korea and raising kids, and I don't think I could ever do that. But like high school kids, they don't have a life these days. They study and study and study. Anyway, but here I seen the kids, how I guess it's a different generation, but there's so much, they don't know what they have. Well, I tell my kids a lot of times, people don't realize what they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take advantage of it.
That's good advice. Yeah.
So I want to say to everybody,
yeah,
younger people, make good choices.
Make good choices, says Tina. There you go. That's quote. So at the end of every podcast, we ask the question, does this matter? And if it does, then why? Because we are about having conversations that matter, even though some of them don't. But this one, I feel, is a very important conversation. I feel that it matters. There's lots of reasons why, but I'm going to ask our guest first. Why do you think conversations like this matter? That was one you weren't prepped for.
Well, I've been through a lot of different places. I lived in three different countries, dealt with a lot of different people. But here in a small town, and even though the high technology world, people know what's going on in the world. But when I got here 20 years ago, I saw a few people I talked to, they born and raised and didn't get to go anywhere. They don't know. They only know what they know.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's souping. It's only souping. But nowadays, I see a lot of different cultures in this town. And there is different thing out there. And there's a different people out there. There is a different culture out there. That is important to know. Yeah. I guess some people doesn't really matter to them. But I think it's nice to know what's out there.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think is matter.
How about you, Rebecca?
I think this matters because personally what I believe is that there's a God who has designed all of us in his image and that one race is not better than the other, but we all represent a part of him. And so just again, for me and other followers of Jesus, he has designed everything intentionally, and it's not an accident that I'm biracial, that, you know, that Liz and I are, that we're half Korean, or that Laura is Caucasian,
fully ginger,
with some European descent there, or, you know, ancestry. So stuff like that.
I mean, for such a time as this.
Yeah, for such a time as this. Exactly. And I feel like younger me had a really hard time with that sometimes. Just like if he wanted us all to be the same age at the same point, you know, we wouldn't have different generations and different levels of age. And, you know, coming from a Korean background and knowing what I was taught about elders and respect, like I feel like this conversation matters as well, because sometimes I feel like people forget that there's a reason that our ancestors or that the people have come before us, and while they blazed a trail maybe for us. And so if that, does that make sense?
Yeah,
it makes total sense. Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that this matters. I think one, it helps us to be compassionate towards others when we have this lens of not just acknowledging differences, but like you said, celebrating our differences. And I think like there are so many people who probably feel like we did. And like I said, I grew up, I loved my childhood, and there, I'm not saying it was negative, but there were those spaces where I felt very different. And so I think it's just important for people who feel that way, no matter for whatever reason, right? To know that, one, you're not alone in that feeling. Mm-hmm. And there are probably so many other people who feel different for other things and other reasons.
Right.
And that I do think we should celebrate those differences instead of being ashamed of those differences. And mm-hmm. Again, like you said, I'm in agreement and not highlighting them more than other people or elevating them to a status or certain, but celebrating what makes us different and not being ashamed that we are different. And I think that this is the body, right? Mm-hmm. The body is the body of Christ. From a Christian perspective, it is different. It is very diverse. It is not, we're all the same and we all do the same function and we all have the same job. We are all very, very different. And if you look at the body, like you're, hands do something different than your feet do, than your ears do, than your eyes do. So anyway, I just feel like this is such an important conversation. One, so people know you're not alone. However it is that you're feeling, you're not alone. Two, your differences deserve to be celebrated, not ashamed. Mm-hmm. And three, this is what the body looks like, you know? So that's why I think it's important. And I think that all of this leads us to compassion for other people and love for other people. Laura, what do you think?
I think it matters because every person's story matters. I love people and I love learning about people and I love learning about what makes them who they are. And I know that God also deeply cares about that too. And I want to be more like Jesus every day. I'm trying to figure out how that, what is that like? What is being more like Jesus like? And I think just listening and caring for people and how, like, how they're treated, how their, what their life experience has been, and just listening to not have a response and helping that shape your understanding of your community and that kind of stuff. So I think that's why it matters for me is, if you have someone that you don't know very well, just ask them questions about their lives and try to get to know them because they're beautiful, amazing human beings. So yeah. That's why it matters.
Okay. So that's why we think that this matters, but we always like to ask our listeners what they think, if they think this matters. And if so, why do they think this matters? So, if you would like to comment, go to our Instagram page from X to Z Pod on Instagram and let us know, or you can email us, right, Laura?
Yep, from ecstasypod@gmail.com.
And I just want to thank Tina and Rebecca for being with us.
Yes.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for listening to us.
We'll see you next time.